My name is Omar Burutu. I'm a member of this committee coming from Mpumalanga.
Thanks, sir. My name is Lydia Mshodi. I'm coming from the Free State Province. I'm the member of this led committee. Thanks, Chairperson.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Dazolias, and I'm also a member of this committee. I'm coming from the Western Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Willem Father. I'm a member of this LEC committee, and I'm from the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bosise Mnode. I'm representing Gauteng and a member of this committee.
Goeiemôre, agbare lede en almal hier teenwoordig. Ek is Jan Gunda. Ek verteenwoordig die Noord-Kaap en ek is ook 'n lid van hierdie komitee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gideon Boshoff. I'm from the Department of Sport and Recreation South Africa. And my team here can talk on their own behalf.
Patrick Roman. I'm a specialist legislative consultant on cycling security matters and sporting events.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Director Bert van der Walt from the South African Police Service Legal Services. And I just want to say it's an honor for me to be here for the first time in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sisa Makaveni. I'm from the Office of the Chief State Advisor.
Chair, sorry, can't this is on the echo here?
Honorable member, I feel sorry for you. We have been trying, you know, the technicians were earlier on here. So it's like the problem is not the country was the problem, but they've indicated that they are coming. That is why I requested the member that we should start so that we try to put, to work a little bit faster. Because today actually that's going to be a briefing. And our second meeting, it will be where we interact, because members will have the bills and go and study, and where they need clarity and where they want to make amendments and all that, then we'll have another opportunity.
Okay.
members, maybe I must indicate that that the deputy minister is going to join us. But maybe you might be later. He'll just join us in this office. We are all subjected to this. My name is Wendy McCarthy, the chairperson for the Select Committee on Education and Recreation. Without any wasting of time, I'm just going to hand over to the department to brief members on the matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make sure that everybody has received a copy of this document that we've actually dished up. Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for allowing us the opportunity.
Sorry, Chairperson, to interrupt. There are more people in the room. Can you just find out who's
in the back?
People at the back, can you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson, Advocate Gordon, Legal Services for Parliament.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Sandy, I'm from here. Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for permitting us the opportunity to give you a brief synopsis of this particularly very important piece of legislation, the Safety of Sports and Recreational Events Bill, and also hopefully, you know, this is an endorsement of the way of things which is going to become because of the aircon, so that will allow us also to conduct this particular presentation in more conducive environmental conditions. Thank you for bearing with us. Chairperson, the objectives of this presentation is to provide a strategic overview of the legislative and the proposed legislated criteria relative to the safety and security planning and delivery and domestic support and recreational events. Also, the objective of this presentation is to introduce a few proposed novel safety and security legislative concepts tailored for South African conditions, which will in future be applicable to stakeholders involved in hosting of sporting and recreational events. Then also, the objective of this presentation is to provide members with a high-level synopsis of the draft bill in order to afford you the ability to interrogate the appropriateness of the key safety and security risk management concepts which underpin the bill from the general public protection and provincial implementation and impact perspective. Revising the risk. Now, Peter Ryan, he used to be the commander in chief of safety and security for 2000 Sydney Games and the IOC safety and security consultant to the Athens 2004 Olympic Games. He said the following: operators of sporting and recreational venues worldwide are revising their safety and security risk assessment, operational plans and consequent management arrangements. And he stated, they are factoring in the unimaginable. Now, the current status of the bill is as follows, Honourable Chair and members. A significant parliamentary activity with regard to the bill has been completed during the last quarter of 2009. Also, countrywide, we had, public hearings facilitated by the Joint Portfolio Committees of Sport and Recreation, on the one hand, and Police, on the other hand. Then, the final amendments as proposed, which result stemming from the public hearings, was effected by the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation during November 2009. Unanimous vote was by the Portfolio Committee on approving the amended bill and its submission for debate. And the vote in the National Assembly was during February 2010.
Honorable Deputy Minister, you are welcome to this meeting. I've already indicated that you are going to join us. So, but because of the conditions that we started earlier on, there was no aircon and all that. We are all worried that we are going to collapse before the end of the meeting, and then we suggested that we should start, but the aircon is now on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members. Honorable members, good morning and apologies for running 10 minutes late. I was with the Portfolio Committee, and they kept me there with a strategic plan. I apologize for running 10 minutes late. And Chair, thank you to you and the Honourable Committee for accommodating the request from our side to move your meeting from 10 to 11. It's really appreciated. I see that Mr. Bossoff and the team have started to introduce themselves, and with your permission, allow them to continue, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The South African Organizing Committee, involved with the FIFA World Cup, are anxious that the bill is promulgated prior to the 2010 FIFA World Cup, as it contains legacy event ticketing protection provisions, which are aligned with its FIFA contractually required event ticketing protection provisions. Now, one might ask yourself the reasoning. Why the legislator focus on risk management delivery at events by Parliament? Why is Parliament involved in this? Firstly, the Alice Park soccer disaster, all of you will recall, happened on 11 April 2001, 43 citizens killed. Secondly,
The Oppenheimer Stadium Falcon soccer disaster happened on 13 January 1991. 42 citizens were killed on site, 8 later dying in hospital. Thirdly, there was findings and final recommendations of Justice Bernard Webber, who is one of our most senior judges, flowing on from the Commission of Inquiry into the Ellis Park soccer disaster, all of which have been incorporated in the bill. More reasoning why we have drafted this piece of legislation, Honourable Chair and members. South Africa has now increasingly become a desirous destination for major international sporting, recreational, political, social, economic events. And our government's policy is to attract and support the hosting of such major events in our country. Now, although not directly regulated, lending legislative support to the hosting by South Africa major events such as 2010 FIFA World Cup also, in a way, contributes to the drafting of this legislation, although it's definitely not a prerequisite having this legislation in place before the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Most importantly, Honourable Chair and members, this legislation also protects the primary stakeholder, the primarily working class, the general public, who attend week after week thousands of people attend sporting and recreational events throughout the country every year. Also, there's a desire to create an omnibus piece of legislation, a single reference point for ease of use by relevant stakeholders that consolidates and integrates domestic event safety and security requirements with cross references to related existing safety and security legislation. For instance, in the UK sports, you have a sports safety framework that requires compliance. Look at these 11 different acts. Now we've combined all these provisions into one act for the sake of friendliness, user friendliness, and efficiency. And we also, another reason for passing the legislation is the passing of key safety legislation that is immediately implementable upon promulgation. Another reason will be to align the worldwide trend to introduce legislation designed to promote public safety at events. Now, the next question you might ask yourself is, why do we require legislation prior to the 2010 FIFA World Cup South Africa? Now, the 2010 FIFA World Cup South Africa Special Measures Act and its regulations that have already been issued pursuant thereto do not regulate the following key safety and security areas required in terms of the FIFA contractual platform, and also the government guarantees, and also the 2010 Safety and Security Operational Planning, which were exposed during the 2009 FIFA Confederation Cup. Now, the matters very pertinent here are, for instance, ticketing matters, ticket counting, stadium venue safety certification for fixed or temporary structures, and then minimum measures to ensure the safety as opposed to security of the general public, and also the formalization of safety and security operational planning structures, and likewise the establishment of offences and penalties for antisocial behaviour inside and outside and in the vicinity of the 2010 stadium, for instance, hooliganism. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen, we state that this piece of legislation is a very reasonable legislation. Unlike the UK, where they have some overreaching and intrusive legislation, for instance, which relates to covert intelligence gathering, UK legislation refers to spectator banning orders prohibiting cross-border travel on mere suspicion of hooliganism behavior, search and seizure of private residences without notice, and also, lastly, compulsory spectator registration to quite a few. So therefore, we can surely state that this piece of legislation has adopted a very reasonable middle-of-the-road approach, which has incorporated the necessary constitutional safeguards. The draft of legislation has also enjoyed an extensive consultation process, and as a result thereof, has been streamlined to promote ease of administration as well. Importantly, Honourable Chair and members, is the fact that we have current challenges when it comes to safety and security at sport or recreational events. The following challenges, amongst others, are currently being faced by the SAP, Emergency and Essential Services, and other relevant safety and security stakeholders. Firstly, the hosting of multiple events in the same area during the same period. Now, there's also resourcing challenges in this regard. Secondly, hosting of events without proper or sufficient public liability insurance being in place. This is a very serious and a very common problem. Also, the failure and the resistance of event organizers to accept their responsibility to provide adequate security at an event. They say it's a SAP function of a type of approach. Moreover, safety and security planning for events is often left at a very late stage, which constitutes a current challenge as well. Failure to consistently apply risk profiling criteria to events is another challenge. Inconsistent application of safety and security measures for different events whose risk profile is similar. Under-budgeting by event organizers in respect of the public safety and security at events viewed by some as an unnecessary profit-limiting expense. And so the list can actually go on with the list, but I think I can stop there because time-wise we're going to run short of time. So I can just brief you on the next, on the ongoing challenges slide. Self-regulation by controlling bodies, event organizers and stadium and venue owners in the past and currently is definitely honorable chair, honorable members, it's not working. We've got a couple of examples. The PSL League match, F&B Stadium, 20 May 2006, not too far back. Mass destruction of property, 1,000 of the stadium seats, set the light and thrown out in the field. Coca-Cola, massive mixed concert, Super Sport Park, 19 May 2007, mass state of dehydration involving treatment and hospitalization of spectators. Rugby semi-final, Karikap, Loftus, mass public.
Chair, I wonder, Mr. Bosov, apologies, honourable chair, honourable members. I wonder, Mr. Bosov, whether we cannot perhaps, in the interest of time in the committee, you know, speed up perhaps the presentation to honourable members. Because the background of this piece of legislation, honourable members, is that the NUEPA Commission, after the Ellis Park disaster tragedy. So I think you've made the case prudently. Let's have respect for honourable members, and let's move on to the just and the essence of what is the point. I mean, we can just say that quickly, but get to the just, please, Mr. Bosov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. NUEPA Commission of Inquiry, made the following recommendations. These are the key generic aspects. Enforcement of safety and security must be in the hands of professional people. Improved fixture scheduling must be in place. Event fixtures must be categorized according to the clearly defined risk profile criteria. Right at the bottom, proper traffic management around around all host stadiums and venues must be in place. And also, effective, secure, and centrally administered match and event ticketing design must be in place. Right at the bottom, proper crowd monitoring procedures must be in place, CCTV, etc. And then implementation of restricted item schedules for all stadiums and venues, for instance. Proper alcohol control and the like. And the list goes on and on. And you can see, just for the sake of time-wise, I think we can just move it in your own time. You can just read through that. But the bill actually underpins that, and we've captured all the recommendations that have actually been addressed in the piece of legislation. And also, the safety and security, especially the security side, must be in the hands of professional people. I'm not going to, you know, we can move the structure of the bill. You can read for yourself. The basic tenets of the bill is the responsibility, so risk profiling of events, the establishment of an annual schedule of events, the safety certification and grading of stadiums. The basic tenets of the bill continue, okay, you can see there, the integrated and timeous event safety security planning, minimum safety and security measures, event ticketing controls, the control of offences. A couple of definitions that we actually need to make you aware of is event. It means a sporting, entertainment, recreational or similar activity hosted at a stadium, venue or along a route or within the respective pieces. Event organizer means any person who plans, is in charge, manages, supervises or holds an event for sponsorship rights to an event or in any manner controls or has material interest in the hosting of an event. Stadium owner is a similar type of definition you can read there. Venue owner is also important. And then we have a controlling body. This is also important because this stems from our National Sport and Recreation Act. We have a definition of a national recreation, right? And the purposes of this particular piece of legislation, you can see in the third line there, we have actually included a provincial federation as well. This actually stems from the deliberations we've had during the public hearing stages. And that's for that reason we have included the Provincial Federation. Event Safety Security Planning Committee, this committee will fulfill the core business of this particular piece of legislation. So you're just referring to what it is and where you can find it, section 16. Key concepts contained in the bill. Legislation will not apply to exempted events. Sorry, you can delete that part there of the Yeah, certain events may be exempted. We'll find that in the legislation. We'll come to that later on. Joint and several responsibility of controlling bodies, event organizers. We'll find that we're trying to establish that as well. Annual risk categorization and designation of events. That is the rule in the governed in the bill. Application of varying levels of safety and security measures at events, dependent on the level of identified risk. You have either a low or medium or a high risk event. Safety and security certification and grading of stadiums are indicated for. Compulsory public liability insurance for events, very importantly, has been captured in the legislation. Then also phasing periods. You can see for a higher risk event, you have 2 years to comply with all the provisions of this particular legislation, as opposed to a medium risk event, which is 3 years, and 5 years for a low risk event. As from the date of promulgation. I just want to name a few others here, the key concepts. Prohibition of events due to safety and security risks, that may happen by way of a notice being issued. And then also there's the creation of offenses and penalties, may be provided for that. Then the scope of the law is to determine, maintain, and ensure the physical safety and security of all persons participants, that means the players, on the field, as well as the members of the public and the property present at the sport and recreational events. Okay. Application of the bill. The provision of this bill will prevail where they may conflict with other existing legislation. But the bill, however, does not apply to gatherings as per the regulations of gatherings. Safeguards to over-regulate in the bill. I've already referred to the phasing period there. I'm not going to delve there. Yes, the provision, this is important also, the provision for events that are arranged at short notice due to factors beyond the control of the event organizers. For instance, football and rugby knockout competitions have been carried for, you know, extreme or exceptional circumstances. I can move on to the next page. Slide. Responsibility for safety and security at events. The primary responsibility to ensure is to ensure that proper event safety and security measures are in place, and that it rests jointly and severally on the controlling body, event organizer, and the stadium venue owner. Now, honourable chair and members, the national commissioner first and foremost, he must establish an event safety and security planning committee for such events. He must appoint the BOC commanders, and he will also issue occasionally spectator exclusion notices if and when required. The commissioner may also direct the person to implement additional safety and security measures. He may actually stipulate conditions for the hosting of a high risk event. He may issue spectator exclusion notices. The controlling bodies, event organizers, stadium venue owners, you will also see that in many cases, these three of them are actually referred to in the same, along the same line. They must appoint sufficient persons responsible for safety and security, for instance, inclusive of private security officers, stewards, event safety officers, to implement reasonable safety and security measures for such an event. Next slide. An event organizer, this is very important, must, if he or she is a natural person, be at least 21 years old. Previously, he was 18 years. When we started the building, it was 18 years. But then, having listened to all the representations, it was decided definitely that those the fact that you have 3 years, you know, a person of 21 years is more experienced than a person of 18 years. And then also we've made the requirement that that person, if you are 21 years old, then you must have the necessary capacity, resources, and experience. So you can't have only one. You must have a combination of all of it. Then we've stated for specific prohibitions in the legislation, Chairperson, on the form members. No person may organize an event unless that person has submitted an annual schedule of events for this categorization, and also ensure that public liability insurance for that event is in place. And also, no person may obtain event tickets to resell or use for commercial purposes, or directly or indirectly sell or promote event tickets without the permission of the event organizers. Categorization of events, there's the annual submission, as I've already alluded to, by controlling bodies, event organizers, and so on, to the National Commissioner for a risk categorization. The National Commissioner then considers the risk, and he actually determines the risk, and then he gives notice to the Minister of Sport and Recreation, as well as the relevant local authority, of the risk classification of such an event. Well, the bill provides for administrative mechanisms to allow for that. And then also the bill provides for 21 risk profiling criteria. I'm just going to name a couple of them. Historic data regarding popularity of the event, relevance of the outcome of the event, the venue location, and expected attendance based on the historic factors. And then also suitability of the stadium or venue for from a safety and security infrastructure perspective. And the safe capacity is very important to be determined, which must be determined. And then also the day of the week. Remember Ellis Park, I think, was on a Tuesday. And it was at 5 o'clock.
Seven.
And that created a real big problem. And that actually was the, that ignited the whole tragic incident. Okay, we can just move on. Safety certificates. The bill provides for the application and issuing of the following categories of safety certificates. The local authority will issue the following: the general safety certificate for existing stadiums and venues, safety certificate for new stadiums, and also for planned alteration, extensions, and grading certificates. We'll come to that later. The National Commission, on the other hand, will issue a high risk event safety certificate. The existing stadium rules will venue for safety certificates. There's processes already involved. There's a phasing period. I've already alluded to that. Grading certificate, just important here to bring this to your attention, that the grading certificate, actually, in that certificate, the following is determined: the safe spectator capacity of a stadium or venue, and also the level of risk, whether it's low, medium, or high, which may be hosted at such a stadium or venue. New stadium or venue design safety certificates, administrative process have been catered for, and then we have the local authority safety and security requirements. Conditions will be set out in this particular certificate, as well as the building legislation and so forth. And then the alterations, likewise, the provision will be made there. Well, the local authority, they will take the following into consideration when issuing that. High risk event safety certificates. This provides for the administrative process that's already been provided. And then with the issue of the high risk event safety certificate by the National Commissioner may be made subject to the compliance with certain conditions by the event organizers. Likewise, we use the contents and amendments of such certificates. We've provided for that. There will be some conditions containing that. Inspectors, we've provided for inspectors to enforce the mechanisms of control. The powers of the inspectors have also been pinpointed. Local authority must issue certificates of appointment of these inspectors. Obviously, you need to also, you can't appoint any person. You need to appoint people who are actually experienced, have integrity, and also have impartiality. Right. Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, as I said earlier, they will fulfill a core business when it comes to the particular piece of legislation. The National Commission must appoint a staff official, commonly referred to as the authorized member in terms of the legislation, and this person will chair the particular ESSPC, that is the abbreviation for Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, ESSPC. And obviously it will consist of various other members of the committee as well. The appointment of such committees is only related to chairperson and honorable members to high or medium risk events, not to low risk events. I'll make that point very clear. Right, the committee then consists of, as you see, the representatives of all those fragments. I'm not going to dwell on that. Functions of it, of this ESSPC, they will consider the categorization of events as categorized by the National Commissioner. And where appropriate, if you change circumstances, they can make written recommendations to the National Commissioner or the Minister of Sport and Recreation with regard to a reclassification of this. They will prepare, this is very important, they will prepare a written event-specific safety and security plan. In case of high-risk events, such a plan will have to be endorsed and approved by the National Commissioner as well. In other words, this plan is drafted to coordinate the functions of the event safety and security role players at such an event. Obviously, they will also assign specific tasks with regard to safety, medical security, deployment of SAPS members, deployment of planned security members, emergencies and essential services, and the bomb. They will also assign that. They will also determine measures with regard to spectator vehicle accreditation, access, accommodation of persons with disabilities, control of liquor, tobacco usage, environment, vendor, corporate hospitality, volunteers, communications, spectator exclusion, we'll come to that later, accredited training of stadium, venue, and event personnel, so just to name a few, that will determine that. They will also demarcate any site area for restricted entry by way of accreditation card or event ticket only. Any zone will also be demarcated by them, surrounding or adjacent to the stadium or venue or a route as an exclusion zone where only the event organizer authorized commercial activities can take place in that zone. They will also advise, for instance, the controlling body event organizer, stadium venue, to take such steps as may be required for safeguarding of the stadium and venue. Okay. Just examples of security measures already placed, turnstiles and so forth. Now the box is the nerve center of any proper safety security delivery and event. Draft bill provides in essence for the establishment of this particular box. Permanent, it can either be permanent or temporary. The responsibility for the establishment of the box is in the case of a stadium or venue, it is the stadium or venue owner. In the case of an event along a route like the Commonwealth, a marathon, it would be the event organizer who's got the responsibility to establish that box. The ESSPC, the Air Safety and Security Planning Committee, may approve the box exemptions for low risk events, yes, for instance. That's applicable to low risk events. The rock role players, you can see there's a number of them, representatives of all those particular fragments again. I'm not going to delve there. Okay, let's go further. The rock commander is very important. Mm-hmm. This has been raised many times during the public hearing sessions, that the rock commander should be an experienced staff official, at least the minimum rank of a captain, who must ensure, and he must be experienced in staffs in these matters pertaining to safety and security at an event. You can't just appoint any SAPS member above the rank of captain. It should be a relevant experience. And they, this is the second plan, you will recall, the Event Safety Security Committee will prepare an Event Safety Security Plan. That's the first plan. The second plan is a proper written BOC plan to be prepared by the BOC. And that should be in place in every event. A plan for a high-risk event is approved by the National Commissioner. Okay. This is how a VOC looks on the inside. This is a Moses Mabhida Stadium at the Durban. This is likewise. And then we enforce that the Act with the law, foreign makes closer provision for the accreditation, access to designated areas. The controlling body, event organizer, or the stadium or venue owner, in consultation with the ESSPC, may, in order to control access, the following persons will be accredited by way of an accreditation card: participants, officials, person who provides logistical support, emergency essential service, police officials, security officers, host stadium or venue employee, stewards, and so the list goes on. I'm not going to dwell on that. Measures applicable to designated areas must be very clearly identified. Access by accreditation card only. Access control officer may refuse access to such an area in specific circumstances. Thank you. Event ticketing. Persons may be required to purchase a ticket for an event. So not to say that it's always going to be for you need to pay for having access to an event. So, and it also states that access to an event may only be gained by way of a valid ticket, day and time specific, or with written permission of the event organizer, stadium, or venue owner. Those tickets sold for an event may not, this is very important, exceed the certified safe capacity of a stadium or venue. You'll find that in section 20 of the law. The ticket sales of a stadium may be prohibited on the day of the event. That's also very, very important. Ticket touting is also prohibited. Spectator and vehicular access, we've made provision for that as well. Lawful search and screening of any person entering a stadium. Lawful seizure of prohibited restricted items. Use of electronic search and screening equipment and so on have all also been dealt with. Exclusion notices is really important because you have some troublemakers, problem people entering into a stadium or venue, and this provision now states that if the events safety security planning committee, if they are the authorized staff member or the BOC commander, if they are of the opinion that reasonable grounds are evident to believe that there are a threat that the attendance of a specific person or group of persons may result in the disruption of an event or cause injury to a person or damage property, then the staff member of the BOC commander may issue a spectator exclusion notice. This is just an example of this particular individual with his maybe I can just refer to this was at the Astra Stadium, and he tackled the ref and broke the collarbone of the ref. I think it was about 3 years ago, and it was a national embarrassment. Okay, but nonetheless. Okay, then safety and security measures, we provided for that as well. The Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, they will also ensure that the following prescribed measures are in place with regard to safety and so forth. And then we've provided for the deployment of state security services. The National Security Commissioner and authorized SAPS member must, relative to the risk of an event, ensure that necessary state security measures and deployments are in place for an event. Appeals, we provided for that extensively. You can appeal with regard to risk categorization of an event, the issuing of any category of safety certificates, for instance, if you are feeling grieved about the way your application has been handled. Okay. Prohibition notices, also the bill makes provision for the issuing of such notices in order to prohibit or to restrict a specific event in certain circumstances. Decision makers in this process will be the National Commissioner or his authorized member, or the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, or the VOC Commander. Now, what are the relevant circumstances which will have to be taken into account? There must be a serious risk to the spectators. Examples, for instance, unsafe temporary grandstands, ticket selling irregularities, power outages, state intelligence information with regard to planned disruption or act of terror. In this case, the prohibition notices will be issued. Public liability insurance, I've already alluded to, very importantly. We've also signed it with a very hefty fine. You must have the bigger public liability insurance in place. Fees, we've also provided for in the bill. Offenses and penalties. There's accountability with regard to failure of stadium owners, operators, event organizers, and other public safety officials whenever they fail to comply with their statutory responsibilities. It might have criminal consequences. Criminal penalties, interesting, range from 5 to 20 years imprisonment, or the equivalent fine for both such imprisonment and such fine. Right, these are just a couple of the offences that we stated in the bill, entering of a designated area and so forth. I'm not going to get into that. You go down further. Thank you very much. That is the end of our presentation. Thank you very much. I'm the chair. I'm the member.
Thank you. Is there any addition if I can? Members, I'm going to allow members for their clarity, but maybe before that, I should just indicate to members that within an hour's time, clearly we are not going to do justice to this bill. And maybe in the presence of the Deputy Minister, you know, there's this, I don't know, perception that if the bill has passed in the NA, for us to just come and pass it. And as the Select Committee, this is not the way we are going to do. We really deal with this bill. We would like to have more information, understanding, you know, so that when we go out, more simply that as the NCOP, we are more of the provincial interest, that we should be in a position, you know, to explain so that people can understand really what was the intention and what are the implications of this bill. And we are going to rely on your legal team to assist us a lot. I'm going to hand over to the members before that, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. But just to respond to the observation made by the Chair, it's absolutely correct that the NCOP can scrutinize the bill. It's absolutely correct that you can introduce amendments. We know that. So the perception is something that that it's a perception, and certainly not with the ministry, nor with the department. Precisely, if you look at the delegation we have here this morning, it gives an indication in austerity measures that we bring them down from Pretoria to be here. It gives an indication, gives a signal. So please interrogate the bill, but allow me to just observe one thing, Chairperson. Modern legislation for modern stadiums for a modern country. We're a step ahead of other people, and we are very proud of this piece of legislation which we've been consulting and benchmarking all over. We had our fights with SAPS, by the way. I'm happy to see you here smiling today. Mm-hmm. But Honourable Chair, no, Honourable Members of the Committee, we are very proud of this piece of legislation. But please ask the questions.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Is that why I'm saying this? Some of the committees were refusing to release members to attend this briefing. But that is something, it's just a perception.
Ish.
Yeah. I'm just going to hand over to members. We tend. I should start this way. Honorable Borotho, Honorable Sibilias, Honorable Fiber, and Honorable Sube. Thank you, Chair. And I'm thankful that we have decided that we will be looking into the bill more so that you can get more clarity. So I'll just be light on this. In that, they are talking about a reasonable legislation and comparing us to the UK. And they are talking about maybe activities that we, like spectator banning orders prohibiting cross-border travel on mere suspicion of hooligan behavior. You know, we have seen around other tournaments around the world that hooliganism cannot be taken very lightly. It's something that is there, and there are groups that just want to go there and interrupt whatever the good things are happening. Now my question would be, what would be a problem to go to extremes, to those extremes, so that we don't allow any space of such activities to happen during our World FIFA tournament? Why should we have to be so reasonable? You know, I'm worried about the reasonable legislation. Reasonable to who? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question goes around the NCOP and the National Assembly. Now, this morning, we hear that actually in November last year, the National Assembly, the Portfolio Committee of Sport, was actually given the chance to hear the presentation from the department. Now, it is in 2010 March. So I actually have a problem with that. In future, I think when the department comes to the portfolio committee and also about sport, then it is best to actually try to get the members of the select committee also there so that they can give one presentation, and then there will be enough time also for us to interrogate that piece of legislation or that document which refers to sport and recreation. That is the one. And why did they not consult us previously before today? That is my first question. And the second one is about the 21 years of the person. Now, in the Constitution, a person is not
adult, okay. Adult, from I think 18 years. Mm-hmm. Now, in connection with this piece of legislation, the age here is referring to 21 years. And then the capacity and the resources and the experience to organize the event. Is there some direction which the legislation put forward to qualify this statement and the 21 years? I think we will have a problem if we put this legislation against the Constitution of South Africa. Then the third one, the public liability insurance. Now, I understand that maybe a huge or one of our senior federations, they can pay the fees for that insurance. The cost of it, Fandari and Siranasi.
Affordability,
that's the word. Public liability insurance. Now, I've got a problem with that. Can the department just specify what is the one of, or maybe more, of the companies out there who's handling with the insurance and the affordability and the cost of this insurance? Will that not have a negative influence on the federation to organize such an event? Because the event organized by these institutions and federations is very important for us, so that the community can attend those events, and also the youth of our community. They are actually interested, mostly of them, interested in attending these events. I have a problem, maybe you can elaborate more on that. And then the age profile of the attendees at the event. I know that certain sport events or recreational events, you may take your baby of 2 months with you. So does that also include that? And then the fifth one, the appeal and time of response. If somebody, say me, are actually arrested at an event or something else which I've done wrong, and then they decide for me not to attend that event anymore, what is the time when I can expect, when I put in my appeal, the time to respond from that? And then according to the practices of the runners, my colleague will ask the question about the cyclists. Now, the runners, they have a club, and they usually run every day in groups. Does this piece of legislation also include them? Because they are actually practicing under the name of the club. That is my last question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the department for such a thorough bill that we're trying to pursue. Madam Chair, I would first start by asking, what does it mean if a natural person, because it should not be only at least 21 years. I don't understand if you get other types of persons than if a natural person. So that's one thing I don't understand. Then inspection on the stadium structures, from what I understand, like at the park, the Shark Tank, for instance. I'm going to be a bit more technical on this. The age of concrete, the strength, if it can handle the weight load and et cetera for certain amount of people, so who's going to do those type of inspections? Specifically weight on these type of structures. I think that's very important. Is this going to fall under the safety certificate or the grading certificate? Perhaps, I'm not sure. Then the evacuation process. I know there was a computer program introduced a few years ago on evacuation processes. at the safety of Stockholm stadiums. I'd like to know on evacuation, how it's going to be handled so that spectators would also take take responsibility, and how they will be introduced to it in terms of if the evacuation has to take place. I'm not exactly sure about that, especially with the World Cup coming up now. Then I want also perhaps just talk with my colleague here, what my colleague spoke about, that the NCRP wasn't involved in this countrywide public hearing which was facilitated by the Joint Portfolio Committee. We didn't have any input on this or anything. It just feels, maybe I'm just feeling a bit minderwaardig, that we were not involved in this process. And it just feels as all of a sudden, you know, it needs to put through to the NCRP, must quickly look at it. It's just a feeling, personal feeling. Then at cycling events, as this bill is safety and sports recreational events bill, I would like to know, like cycling events on public roads, if the sport clubs and if the cycling, if it's also going to fall under this type, if it will be handled under this type of events bill. Because it is a cycling event, though it's not in a stadium. Will there be any legislation towards this for safety of cyclists? I know these are recreational cyclists that got hurt, but as I was president of Vehicle and Recycling Federation at the time, for motor vehicles, for instance, on roads, will these event organizers be held liable for this? What is the situation on that? And, for instance, cyclists riding on the road, practicing with numbers on, will that be part of legislation to, for instance, help that type of clubs responsible for their riders? It's just a question I'm also posing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I would like to, my colleagues have implied on what I'm going to be saying. The timelines, it is being introduced to us today. When are we expected as this select committee to be responding so that you take it through? The second one is the it's on the exemptions. I am reading that the minister may publish a bill in terms of which can be exempted or which events can be exempted. And in my thinking as a former trade unionist, you are saying a person applies should prove that this activity was in the annual plan or whatever. They may not, let me take a union, they may not foresee that they will have a strike, and then they are convening a mass meeting to finalize and solidify the mandate. Does it mean that the commissioner should not agree to allow them to hold their mass meeting in the stadium? It also goes to the students in terms of age. You have courses that may hold its rally in the stadium because leaders may not be 21 or the leaders may not be 21. And then it automatically takes them out of the of holding any event in the stadium. The other one is on the how does the bill envisage the enforcement? I have an example of Ellis Park, which has its own measures in terms of what to happen and not to happen. When there is rugby, you find traffic cops managing traffic. When it is soccer, people park far from the stadium and you have to walk a long distance. Some of the things that are the liquor and whatever is not prohibited if it is us getting there, soccer, but allowed when it is ready. So how do, what are the measures of enforcing these things in the stadium? Thank you.
Before I give you to the department, like I indicated that we still have to go through this bill. This is the last piece of bill. But I just want to check, because when I was listening to the presentation, maybe I might take it from another perspective, that we are from the provinces and we are representing the provinces. That when you talk about recreational activities, we do, and to me it's like they're not, we are looking at the high risk activities. What about this ordinary, where you find where children will be gathered at the stadium for recreational activities? You know, this is good, but it's like it's more of high profile, not looking into the actual things that are happening on the ground. If you can, maybe let's take this round and then we'll give members the second round to ask questions.
Chair, thank you. The legal team will respond to the questions that I would respond to. I'm merely coming in on two. In fact, three. What is a natural person? It's us sitting here, we are natural people. In terms of the law, a first corporation, a company, is a legal persona. So you can't put up a shelf company and do things. I hope the penny drops. Thank you. Public hearings, Honorable Chair, is not conducted and organized by this department. It is unfortunately a question that should be raised in another forum, and not in the department, with respect, please. The time of the presentation to the NCOP is also not in the hands of the department. I'm not shifting blame, I just think it's important that we say this. Although Chair, one needs to say that this bill is coming a long way, and it is unfortunate, it's really unfortunate that we are only now getting to the completion phases of it, with, you know, after 2009 elections, because there were consultations previously, processes were conducted, inputs were obtained. Politically, we made very sure of that. So I really apologize if we were, to a certain degree, overtaken by events. There were no malice in that. Lastly, the question of the importance and the timing of this bill. Nobody can tell a committee to finalize a bill today. I mean, this is not the intention at all, by far not. But I need to draw attention to the fact that this piece of legislation is fairly important. It is, with respect, fairly urgently needed, to the extent that it speaks to the ticketing of 2010 and other related matters that goes with that. So we're not trying to steal it, but it's humbling. We say, well, you know, the gravity of the importance, that's it. The Honorable Chair, so, but it's up to this committee. I mean, we've been working very hard and very long on this bill to ensure that we comply. Honorable Chair, I think to Mr. Bossoff must I go into the specific questions and just give the answers, not the full chapter, just the answer to the point, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will respond to a couple of questions here, and my colleagues here, at random, they will also assist in addressing, you know, your concerns in this regard. With regard to the reasonable legislation, as opposed to the UK legislation, why is our legislation so reasonable, as opposed to the UK, which is rather draconian and overreaching, far overreaching. we had a look at our Constitution Act as well. Obviously, we weighed up that against our Constitution and to harness all the rights enshrined in our Constitution in that way, and we felt that because we're creating an omnibus piece of legislation which caters specifically for South African needs and it's consumer friendly from a South African perspective, we felt that, you know, there's no need to draft overreaching regulations or legislation for that purpose.
Madam Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, just to amplify on that answer is, yes, it is a reasonable piece of legislation, but it has some teeth. And those teeth are to be found with regard to the example that you gave in the exclusion notices to deal with hooliganism, and that is obviously administered by the South African Police Services, prohibition notices, and very heavy offences, very heavy penalties for the list of offences that we have. Thank you, Madam. Sorry, one further thing, something the Deputy Minister mentioned, and he's quite correct, is that it's also tailored for South African conditions. You know, in the end, this is not the United Kingdom. They have particular unique challenges, and we have challenges as well. And I think this legislation was designed to address those challenges. Thank you.
And also, the question was raised with regard to the age of an event organizer, 21 years. Relative to 18 years. 18 years, we do agree that in terms of our constitution, 18 is the is the coming of age, a major, so to speak. You're not a minor anymore, you become a major when you're 18. But I think my colleague here, Sisa Makabeni, there's a court case in that regard. I'm not sure, but he can also elaborate with regard to, because we had it, after having, we had various consultations, provinces, and it came to the fore time and time again that the age of 18 is too young, because really the 3 years you've gained as from 18, it really assists you to become more mature, and also from a sourcing point of view, from an experience point of view, you will be in a better position to qualify as an event organizer, having more experience, especially 3 years down the line, as opposed to 18. You just become now a major in terms of the Constitution Act. But maybe Mr. Makabeni here can also elaborate further on that point.
Thank you, Chair. I have no specific case in mind, Chairperson. What I can say is what is relevant pertaining to the Constitution is that they should not be unfair discrimination that results from legislation, and whatever measure is put up in legislation should be rational when it is tested against what the legislation seeks to achieve. So what would be need to be seen by the courts when they look at the matter is whether when legislators were coming up with the legislation, when they apply their mind to the issue that they wish to address, or the mischief that they wish to address in the legislation, they were rational, and whether they were not arbitrary in the choice that they made. And I think the National Assembly Committee looked at the issue and decided that in their wisdom, 21 years was the more appropriate a number of years for a person to be able to host those events. The other issue that was raised by the member was why the committee was not consulted previously. The Deputy Minister has already answered that, but also to point out to the committee that according to the rules of Parliament, there is a procedure that is followed by Parliament in considering bills. So it is now formally before this committee, and the department is bringing it before this committee, as it has been referred by the NA to the NCOP to consider it. So this is the NCOP's chance to look at the bill, to consult on it if it deems it appropriate, and to proceed with it as it suits it, Chairperson. The other issue, I think I've dealt with the issue of consultation. The honourable member asked who the legislation should be reasonable to. I also, in passing, addressed that it should be reasonable to. It should be reasonable when viewed in line with our constitution, and the test is again that it should not be arbitrary. It should not be overreaching. It should not be. It should be rational, basically. That the choice that is made should be rational, considering what our legislators want to effect. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, also just on the age issue, and this relates to one of the other questions asked by another honourable member. The question of 18 years, I think, is applicable in, for instance, the Regulation of Gatherings Act, where political gatherings and, for instance, a rally by a union would be affected by that specific legislation. And in that case, an organiser may be 18 years. And I think it was because of this importance that the state law advisor referred to, the importance of the right to political freedom and also the freedom of speech, that the age in that legislation is 18 years. And that also relates to the remark about this legislation affecting, for instance, unforeseen rallies or meetings of political unions or labor unions or political parties, and that is also regulated by the Regulation of Gatherings Act, Honorable Chairperson, where the timelines are different. In this legislation, it may also happen that an event is unforeseen and there is exception for that allowed, but this is very similar to the Regulation of Gatherings Act, where such an unforeseen event is also allowed for.
Before I allow members, there was a question on public liability insurance, the time frame for appeal. The inspection, you know, that Honorable Faber spoke about, the issue of the cycling event on the public road, if we can just get something around that.
I can just refer to the appeal question. The question was raised, but you know, in terms of the people's grant goal, when you appeal, within what time limit should you appeal, and how long would it take for that appeal to be finalized? In terms of the grant goal, it reads that a person that is not satisfied, that's in terms of clause 42, a person that is not satisfied with a decision taken against him or her under this act may within 14 days lodge a written appeal with the appeal board established under section 26. Now obviously the appeal must set out the grounds. That is captured in subsection 2, and sub clause 3 says, until any appeal has been decided by the appeal board, the decision must be regarded to have been validly made or given. And then 4, the prosecution of an appeal in terms of this section must follow prescribed procedures. So in terms of the regulations, we will be defining these timelines much more specifically. But likewise, you'll also find in the sub-clause 5, where it states that the appeal board must promptly decide and dispose of an appeal lodged before it. And in any case, must ensure that the object of lodging the appeal is not defeated by the appeal board's delay in reaching its decision. Now, you must read this in conjunction with the particular regulations which we'll be drafting. This is actually a principle empowering provision saying that the appeal board must apply its mind swiftly. But then we also, when we come to the regulations, we'll definitely structure it and determine the limits within it should be finalized.
Madam Chair, with regard to certain of the technical questions, on the public liability insurance, it's very fortunate, ma'am, that this is probably the cheapest insurance that money can buy. And we thought it would be a good idea to give you a practical example to give an indication of how cheap it is. The current, using Ellis Park Stadium as an example, the current public liability insurance bill per annum for 50 events is 190,000 Rand, which is, if you divide it up, is 3,800 Rand per event. With a stadium that, as you know, with its extended capacity, is up to 64,000 spectators. So for small events, the type of costing that it drops down to, it obviously depends on the capacity of the event and the infrastructure because a risk is assessed. But for a small event in a small venue, you'd probably be looking around about 1,000 Rand to put the necessary public liability insurance in place. Of course, the question is, and I think this is debated extensively by the members of the Portfolio Committee, is that we also have to move away from a situation where you host an event, you attract members of the public to that event, and then persons may be injured or, God forbid, killed at that event, and then in the end, who carries the can for that? Is it the state again, or should it be the event organizer? So that's really where it comes from. But I think the thrust of our answer to that is that if you do, then you can independently verify that it is a very cheap type of insurance. Moving on to the age, there was a question on the age profile relating to babes and arms, and you're quite correct. Now, that is one of the reasons why we as a team put that in as one of the risk profiling criteria that you have to look at when considering whether an event is a high risk, a medium risk, or a low risk event. And one of them would be, as maybe the practice at PSL matches, for example, or club football matches, or club rugby matches, is the bringing of children in arms to that particular facility to for people to gain access to that. So that would be a factor which you would take into account. And you might even have a rule that says, no, it won't be allowed. It'll only be one person per spectator per seat. Or it will be allowed, given the fact that it won't be a high capacity event. Talking to the cycle event, a very topical, obviously, question, and the quick answer to this is yes. If it is organized within the within a club, if it's a club, for instance, cycle ride, the provisions of this bill will kick in. It will be considered a low-risk event, and there will be minimum safety and security measures which the event organizer, which would be the club, would have to put in place in respect of that. Obviously, the position might be different if it's just a group of friends that organize it in a suburb. But the answer to your question as far as if it's a club ride, they would have responsibilities, the club members, to ensure that minimum safety and security measures are put in place, given the little risk profiling that they would do for that event. Then moving on to the question relating to safety certification, yes, good example. There is spoiling, they call that spoiling of the concrete at the stadiums. That was a good example that you gave, is that it falls under the provision dealing with safety certification. And you will note when you study the bill, no doubt you studied it, but when you really get down to it, the detail, you'll note that it refers to engineering certificates, as the Deputy Minister mentioned it behind me, is that yes, independent engineers will have to give the necessary structural safety certification, amongst others, before there will be, and it's an annual process, and then they're obviously tied to a grading certificate as to whether it will be a low, medium, or high-risk event that would be able to be hosted there based on the infrastructure and certification of that. As far as the evacuation processes are concerned, obviously the detail will be contained in the regulations, but that obviously falls amongst two issues that will also be the safety you that in respect of all the 10 stadiums that have been built and upgraded, all of that's been tied to the safety certification of those stadiums. But in terms of the measures, if you just give some practical measures to the members, the big screens, for instance, in the big venues that have got them will be used and have been used before Cricket World Cup, etc., for the communication of that information. Because I know where the question comes from. It's all very well to have a plan in place, but how does the public know about it? And how do you communicate it to them? The public address systems, obviously, and then the safety stewards as opposed to security officers that are deployed at events. And you will see in the legislation the training of people, because it's the one thing to ensure that a member of the public would be guided safely out of a facility. And again, that obligation will rest upon the event organisers or the owner, stadium or venue owners as far as that is concerned. The issue of enforcement, you have inspectors. We have an inspectorate in terms of the enforcement of the legislation. You have your event safety and security planning committee and the chair of that committee with regard to ensuring that you have consistency. And I think that's where the Honourable Member from Gauteng was alluding to, is that we as a team and the department had noted previously that there was discrimination in the application of safety and security measures at events. In other words, if I went to a football event at Ellis Park, which I've done, I couldn't get a beer there in a plastic cup. But if I went to a rugby match, I could get as much as I wanted, in addition to what I might have drunk outside. So that's the one thing that we've addressed, attempted to address in this legislation, is the consistency of measures which will apply to all events. So, for example, if you go to Moses Mabhida Stadium now, you are able to buy 500 mils of beer in a plastic cup when you go there, when you go to a PSL football match or a SAFA-sanctioned match, which is the correct procedure. But it's all done in terms of risk. But I just wanted to address that it's the consistency of application. It's formalizing. This legislation effectively is formalizing that which has been occurring but not consistently at events. Moving to the question by the chairperson, it's a very good question. Yes, when you move quickly through a presentation like this, it almost seems, yes, it's all geared towards high-risk events, but it's certainly not the case. If you look at the exemptions and the provisions of this legislation, there is a distinction made between the low-risk and high-risk events. So, for example, for a schoolboy football match, you won't have to establish a venue operations centre, be it permanent or temporary. You won't have to have an event safety and security planning committee. The low-risk venues, as we've heard, will have 5 years to put some minimum measures in place as far as safety issues are concerned. Obviously, that also relates to risk because, again, you can't say, for instance, this tied to capacity, because I can assure you that you can have 1,000 people at Western Cape Province rugby match. Only 1,000 people, and people can die or serious injury amongst the spectators there. So the police play a vital role, and obviously, practically speaking, the local police officer in that particular jurisdiction would obviously be consulted with, and he or she will say, no, it's fine, we'll have a police officer there, we'll have a ambulance, not an ambulance, but a paramedic there, but the schoolboy event can continue. And that takes us back to the reasonableness that we talked about earlier, not making it overreaching, because we are mindful. And I think the important thing for you as members from the provinces is that, as with the cities, the provinces also have facilities. So you'll also be considering that, those of you who do own facilities, in terms of implementation of this, and maybe looking at the safety and security infrastructure of certain of your facilities. Thank you, ma'am.
Members, is there any other Honourable Roto than Honourable Sevilla? Thank you, Chair. This is very short and I can't find it. It's on the inspection by the local council. My experience has taught me that you find that there are engineers that has been hired by the local council to go and inspect on the roads, for instance, after somebody has put on a tar road. But in 3 months' time, there are potholes and everything, and that person has been paid and all that. Now, is there maybe in the legislation, because we didn't go through it very directly, a space where we make sure that these companies become liable to the damages, or how did you put it? Because there are purposes of bribes that are taking place also. So how are we going to ensure that this engineering company is liable to whatever happens after it has given the green light? That would be my question, especially at those levels of local government. And then the other thing, last week, Comrade Chair, when you talked about safety and security planning for events often left to a very late stage, I'm a bit worried about that, asking myself whether, because I've been looking here, I find something under deployment of state security services that talks of there must be relative to risk of event. I am not sure as to whether that is proactive or it's only when it happens. Maybe the language beats me. Otherwise, if it's proactive and that this national commissioner gets the plans before time, I'll be okay with that. Unless it happens only when there is something happens at the event that we only acquire the services of that, and the left for too long, it's very worrying. How do we keep that? Is it covered somewhere? Thank you. Those are my last question. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually looking into this situation from the past. I'm coming from a disadvantaged community.
Now, in our community, then the people will usually have a problem to afford the minimum 1,000 rand. Because most of the time, the people who are organizing the event, they don't have that kind of money. So will that a minimum cost or a maximum cost? That is the first problem which I have around this. Because when the organizers of that group don't have the money to buy that liability insurance, then they will be prevented to hold that event. That is the problem I've got and the worry. The other thing is around about the liability of the club. I think the chairperson or the president of the club will be liable to any damages or accidents happen. And not the club. Maybe that direction must be given to me. The other thing which I a little bit worried about is the total cost of the bill. Now on page 29, that is the estimate cost 2010-11, 2011-12, 2012-13. Must I add the expenditure of those 3 years there, the medium term, or is that only the first one which I must bear in mind for the total cost? That's just for me and for my information, the explanation on that. And the other one, I hear this morning that the National Assembly, the Portfolio Committee of Sport, was actually decided on the 21 years. Now, as a representative of the Western Cape, I will have a problem to explain this situation to the community in the Western Cape. So if the people outside there, when I go to them and tell them that this is a situation around the 21 years, how can I defend that? So then there will be a clash between the NCOP and the National Assembly. That is a problem, and I want you to take note of that problem which I will have as the member of the NCOP on representing this bill to the community. The other thing is that in this bill, they stated that when this bill becomes law, then it will replace every other legislation referring to this information in this bill. So then that will be the law
to organize events and so on. So I heard that in the, what is that other document? There's another document, I think you was referring to that, about the public
that's it.
So that one will be replaced. That one will be replaced with this one. Just that question. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Maybe, members, let me just try to explain. We do have procedures, that is parliamentary procedures. The bill, this is still a bill, and the NA have dealt with the bill. That is why it is referred to the NCOP. That is why in the start I indicated that as the NCOP will have, we can't do justice to this bill today and say that we can do with everything and finish. Because today it was just a briefing. So we are still going to go through the bill, and the department will also come back where we'll, if the amendments that we feel as the NCOP will have to include. This is our responsibility as the NCOP. Is that a procedure that we should follow? Let me just hand over to...
Honourable Chairperson, if I may address the first question about the events that are left to the last minute. This is often a major problem for the South African Police Service to deal with. I do not know of any major event that we have had any problems with that was arranged at the very last minute. And maybe I can refer the Honourable Committee to last year, I think we had the Indian Premier League, the IPL, that was moved here on a very, very short notice. And I think the security arrangements, they were very adequate, and we didn't have any negative feedback on that. So the formalization of the structures that are currently in use by the police will obviously assist the police, but I think the practice that is currently taking place will be taken further by this legislation, which is obviously welcomed by the police. With regards to the costs associated with the bill, Chairperson, from the perspective of the South African Police Service, as I said, this is something that we are implementing at the moment to some extent and on an unofficial basis. For us, there may be minor restructuring to allow for the application processes, etc., but that is not something that we foresee will require major expenditure on our part. With regards to the question about the replacement of all other legislation, it is quite correct what the member referred to, that this act will supersede, it doesn't replace other legislation, it just supersedes it. But there's a specific exemption for the Regulation of Gatherings Act, which is more focused on political and that type of issue. So the Regulation of Gatherings Act will run parallel with this legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
In a follow-up answer to the question on the public liability insurance, well, I could say with tongue-in-cheek that Vasco da Gama football side made it into the Premier League with a lot of support from members of the disadvantaged, and it's admirable, but the formal and official answer is you can apply for exemption. The legislation provides for application for exemption to the minister. So if that type of situation were to arise, you could apply for exemption on that basis. And then obviously the municipality or the local authority or even the provincial authorities might have to assume that risk from a public liability perspective. Thank you. If I may, just one other thing. On the 21 years, if we have to look at all the issues that were debated around the country in the portfolio hearings around the country, and I can assure you, we had an extensive period over 2.5 months where we travelled this whole country. This was the biggest issue, this age issue. And I've just like to say that it was the portfolio committee. It was originally 18 years, but it was after their consideration of inputs in the Free State, inputs in Madiseng, outside of East London, and all of these areas. Church groups in particular were very strong on the fact that they felt that the 18 was too young. And I think it's a question that we all have to, as reasonable legislators, have to ask ourselves as to, in the end, the event organizer assumes certain responsibilities. And they are getting gatherings of people together. And it's got to do, as I say, it's tied to resourcing and capacity, etc. But in the end, it's a delicate decision. Based on those representations right around the country, it was moved up to 21. I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't the portfolio committee that said it must be 21. It was based, and it's well recorded, and there's available the inputs that were made at these various, we were well recorded by us at these various hearings. Thank you, ma'am.
Chairperson, I think we've missed the question there raised by the honourable member pertaining to the exemption of events. Which events may be exempted? Just to cite a couple of examples, for instance, a funeral, a big funeral, a big wedding. Those type of events, comes to mind when you think about, exemptions. But not to say that it's actually just, limited to those events. And private events. Private events will also fall within that category. But obviously you need to motivate. You can't just apply. It should be well motivated and populated in your request. Then also the enforcement of the bill. Remember also the four is referred to, how will this bill be enforced? Well, apart from the provisions we already have in the bill, you have regulations. We are busy drafting and finalizing the regulations, which is encompasses about 90 pages. So it's a hefty, a lot of detail, which will actually trickle down from all these provisions and to make provision for empowering, people to do certain things and not to do other things. And also, for instance, parking away from a stadium. Remember also referred to, that inconsistency with regard to how would you deal with that? We have a provision dealing with vehicular access control, but obviously, again, likewise, we will also have the regulations, the provision dealing with parking areas and so forth.
Ma'am, with regard to the question on the engineers and also relating to enforcement, engineers will be involved in the safety certification processes. Now, the reason that the independent engineers were considered, and they have to be registered engineers, was the fact that you couldn't have, for instance, a local authority that may own a facility passing a safety certificate or approving one for itself. So the legal team obviously looked at ways of addressing that particular challenge. And obviously professional engineers have a lot at stake. Firstly, their registration could be cancelled if it was found to be the example that you gave. Criminal, if they're found to be corrupt, obviously criminal practices. And I think in the end, it would be a sad day in our country if we were to start designing legislation around possible corrupt practices of people. But the enforcement, I just want to say to put your minds at rest, that will be done by inspectors appointed by local authorities. They will be full-time people. There's certain qualification criteria that was touched on during the presentation relating to the impartiality of such persons, the integrity of such persons and experience, etc. And they will have certain powers, but not all powers of these officers, to give them the necessary teeth to ensure that those persons responsible, be it a stadium or venue owner, an event organizer, or even a national controlling body of sport, that complies with the legislation. Thank you, ma'am.
Before I give to Honourable Dedicus, I'm seated here, I'm wondering, because this Section 75 bill, but when you unpack it includes the provincial, activities. Most of the activities are at the provincial. So I'm starting to wonder that why Section 75 and not Section 76.
Just to draw a comparison, we have, for instance, the South African Boxing Act. In that act was created, also the 75 law, it was created essentially to maintain standards in terms of the Constitution Act. It empowers the department, because you won't find any reference to the department. The provincial competency ties up with sport and recreation as well as facilities. But obviously when it comes to maintaining essential standards in terms of the Constitution Act, it allows for the department then to create national legislation, like for instance the African Boxing Act. And in that act, just to go away with comparison, you have a reference to provincial boxing commissions. So, you know, clearly you can see that, you know, even though it's a national act, there's a reference relative to provinces, and it's not making it actually a 76 law in that regard, because it still seeks first and foremost to maintain the essential standards. Likewise, this piece of legislation has been created to maintain those standards. I hope I've tried to explain, you know, why. And you have references to the provinces, but it's definitely not a provincial law, because it affects the national interest. And nationally, it affects stadiums and venues on a national basis. So obviously, province is coming to play because those venues you will find in the provinces. So, yeah.
I don't want to labor on this issue of the 21 and the 18, 821 and the 18 years. But in my community, that's why I'm actually coming again to this age group. Now, in my community, they usually organize the under 16 cricket and the under 12 soccer. So all the clubs and the schools are actually included into that event. So, but that event is usually organized by a person of 19 years, 18 years, or 20 years, because that is his interest. Now, my question is, in that situation, will that person be excluded to apply to organize this event? Or can we bear in mind that there will be also some exemption and also built into this bill to let that person also organize those sporting events or anything else? There can be maybe something else, a choir group or so on. Because in my community, that usually takes place.
Again, ma'am, if I may, the legislation does provide for exemptions. As to how those exemptions will work, it will normally, and I will stand to correction by my colleague from the South African Police Services, cascade to the local police station. And obviously a decision will have to be made. So that organizer at 18 who's now got three or four schools coming to play a cricket tournament or football tournament, etc., they will have to, you know, to obviously advise via the provisions of the legislation the local police structures, and then they could include, when they put in their schedule of events that they would be hosting, they could apply for exemption as far as the age is concerned. And, you know, that is something that in the end will have to be considered by the South African Police Services. And I'd like to think that that station in your area is part of that community. But as I say, it's a tricky issue, and we could debate, you and I, this, I think, the whole day. Because it's understood and appreciated what you say. And I don't think you're the only community which raised these particular issues. Thank you, ma'am.
Honourable Member,
Honourable Saiba, do you want to come in? Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on the Constitution. I just thought, like, as Madiba said, never again will anyone be judged by race in
all these type of things. Now, are we now judging on age here? I'm just asking, is it not your constitutional right, if you're 18 years old, to also be able to participate in this? I'm just asking, I mean, I'm not a subject matter expert on this. Jefferson, let me just come in. I think we as the NCUP must just debate that too. And maybe we can find some way to accommodate our sensitivities around it.
Thank you, Honorable Tivila, but like I indicated, that my understanding, this was a briefing, because we do have this, but because now we have been briefed, it gives us an opportunity to go and study this, and when we call the department again, then we'll raise our issues. It gives us the opportunity, because it's better now, because we've got a briefing from the department, then for our second meeting, then it's where, yeah.
Thank you, Chef. As has been pointed out, Chairperson, the starting point of the bill was 18 years. And then there was public hearings, and then the bill having been tabled before the National Assembly, when it was considered by the committee considered those inputs from members of the public and decided that they were reasonable in its view, and included 21 years. Now, the issue of the rights in the Constitution, those rights in the Constitution are not absolute, Chairperson. They can be limited as long as that limitation is justifiable. Well, there will be a number of justifications. And so it will be those the limitation that would apply in this case would need to be justifiable, having regard to what the legislation seeks to effect. And in this case, the committee considered that the issue of safety of members of the public was more paramount than the issue of the age of the person who is hosting the event, and decided on upping the age limit to 21 years instead of 18 years. The Select Committee can still propose an amendment regarding that issue. The matter is before it. It can still propose an amendment, but because it's a Section 75 bill, it will still go back to the NA, which will have to either agree with the NCOP or disagree with it. And the other issue that was raised by the member, I'm forgetting now, okay, I'll come back again. Okay. I've forgotten the question.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think we need to take it at what you said, that the bill has been introduced to this select committee as to the legal processes, and this select committee will interact with it and then have its views. But then we need, when we discuss those views with ourselves, and not refer us to what the portfolio has said, because there are processes in terms of, if we don't agree, then there's a mediation processes and whatever. So we will allow us to argue whatever that has been reported from the public hearings or from the portfolio, hear our views without being taken a certain position before us, so that we don't feel like we are just making it for procedural purposes. There's no need for us to crack our skulls and respond to this. Thank you. Let me just do this. Let me just request a proposal here that the parliamentary procedures, the bill has just been introduced to the Select Committee on Education and Recreation. We are going to follow the procedures, and then maybe if I have to cut what Honorable Move is saying, that
you know, the reference to NA is like maybe the department wants to turn them out. So but let me just close the matter on this note that there are procedures. That is why the bill came from the NA. Now it has been tabled officially in the NCOP, and then the bill now is with the NCOP. Then everything will go and fall from the NCOP level. Members, are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Yes, Chairperson, I would like to clarify the issue, Chairperson. My position is not to channel the committee. I am giving what happened in the NA as a way of giving history of what took place in the bill, not to channel the committee. It's the way of giving history of what took place. That is the only.
Your point is understood. Thank you. Honourable members, like I indicated, this was the briefing. We're still going to interact with the bill. We'll have another meeting where we'll come ready to interact and understand the bill more clearly, and then so that when we go out or when we say let's give it the time to go ahead, then we understand the issues in the bill. On this note, let me just take this opportunity to thank all the members and the department. I know you from the portfolio committee, but I think we've got members who are harder than Honorable Kampela. It's just that their voice are a little bit soft, but they are harder than him. On that note, I would like just to say thank you to the members and the department. The invite will come this soon after we've attended. Thank you.